You're listening to Golf in the Northwest podcast on 1080thefan.com, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.
The latest tips and equipment to improve your game. The latest from the leaderboards and your favorite courses. This is Golf in the Northwest, an action-packed hour about everything golf. Brought to you on the fan by Royal Exteriors. Triple pane windows for up to 60% less than double pane. RoyalExteriorsLLC.com. And by Laurelhurst Market, more than just your family neighborhood steakhouse. Now with award-winning PGA professional Harold Bluestein, here's your host, Jason Swigard.
And a fine good morning to you all. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
And to you. Happy Father's Day to you.
I think my boy's going to take me to Top Golf tomorrow night.
Oh, that'd be fun. I've been there a number of times. It's great fun.
So, yeah.
Food's good.
Do that. I got Monday off, so we can stay up late.
Oh.
Yeah, the summer of swag is on. Monday's off, baby.
Oh, wow.
Although I'm working all day today. You're going to get a lot of swag on the fan today. We got the Les Schwab Bowl coming up this evening out at Hillsborough Stadium.
How much swag is too much swag?
You can never have too much swag.
Really? Will?
I think when you start hearing in your dreams in a very echoey voice, first on the fan, that might be a little too much.
That's it. Yeah. Huh?
Just a little too
much. We'll find out.
So I can take on as much Jason Swigard as possible.
If you go into seizure hearing his voice, then you know you've had too much.
So we'll find out. Well, we kick in, and also the new summer job kicks in on Friday. Out with the hops.
Oh, that's weird. So not weird. That's great. The PA announcer.
Yeah, public address. So the team started. They had their season opener last night. Fell in Eugene 2-0.
I'm sorry. I have a question about that because you have a radio voice.
Yes.
Right. And at some points you do put it on for the PA job. How are you going to go about that? Is it going to be same as you on the fan, or are you going to take more of like a leveled tone?
No, it'll be a little deeper and a little less over the top for baseball.
Yeah.
Because baseball is, you get in, you have a presence, let everybody know what's going on, and then get out of the way for the game.
It's a steady game.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be the typical swag.
No. I won't be super swagging it up.
It's going to be turned down a bit.
So it'll be there as more of a platform for everything else. Just
I got where you're going.
Yeah,
I'm sniffing what you're smelling in.
Exactly.
You're the foundation of the experience there.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yep. That
just,
not dark.
Just setting the tone for everybody.
Right.
Letting everybody know what they need to know, and then enjoy the game.
Well, let's talk about this game.
But this game, this weekend, you can't ask for much more than the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. The weather cooperating so much that not even the USGA could mess this up, although they're probably grumbling with all the red numbers. I think it's fantastic. I think it's fair. We'll get into a little bit of that as well. Our friend Matt Adams from Golf Channel and Fairways of Life going to join us at 8:15 to go further into this U.S. Open. You've got a star-studded leaderboard. Not all the stars are up there, but there are plenty of them to keep you interested all weekend long, as well as a few lesser-known names. I don't want to say unknown names, but lesser-known names that you see, starting with Gary Woodland. We have a few audio bites from some of the leaders as well that we'll get to here throughout the hour. Tip segment coming up. We see the rough. You know, you're like, this isn't the February clam bake with the celebrities out there that you're used to seeing at Pebble Beach. They let that stuff grow wild.
Yeah.
And you better be in the fairway and on the greens to give yourself a chance.
Well, we have some of that in around the Northwest. The style of golf courses now has been a lot of tight lies around greens. So you're going to see some of that. But at the U.S. Open, they are growing the rough up around the greens, which small greens, a lot of rough up. We have some of that. How do you get out of it?
Yeah, how do you get out of it? How do you hit when you're just in that first, foot of the deep stuff,
right,
and you need to hit it 3 yards because you're on the high side of the green, and mm-hmm. it's going to roll away from you.
Right.
How do you hit it out of the stuff to get it to go straight up, land softly 3 yards away? And relative to, you see the pros try it. They're hit and miss at best, but how do you give yourself a chance to leave it on the green and save maybe par or bogey?
Well, we'll talk about that in the tip segment, and I can tell you that prayer is not part of it.
No.
It doesn't hurt. Say a little prayer before you hit that shot, but we'll talk about how you actually can hit it.
All righty. And then we'll give our predictions, what we're hoping to see, what we think we're going to see the rest of the weekend out there at Pebble Beach. But as always, we begin by going inside the ropes.
It's time for an insider's look at the leaderboards, the latest on all tours, plus local golf events and golf news. This is Inside the Ropes, part of Golf in the Northwest. Brought to you on the fan by Royal Exteriors. Triple pane windows for up to 60% less than double pane. RoyalExteriorsLLC.com.
Well, I can tell you that you got to get out and play. I played a pro-am on Thursday at Broadmoor Golf Course. We have some good public golf courses in our area. If you have not played Broadmoor Golf Course over on Columbia Boulevard, get out there and play. Last week we had Jake Bader from Colwood just down the street from that. Broadmoor was in unbelievably good shape. And it's a great value. So get out there and play.
There you go. I actually got out with my boys last Monday out at Forest Hills, also in excellent condition. We were out there when it was a little warm, but the greens are rolling true, about 11 on the stimp meter. Hit it below the hole when you're going out there, my friend. You know, it's not the longest course, but there's plenty out there to trip you up. But those greens are sloped mostly back to front. Leave it below the hole. Give yourself a chance.
Quite a bit like Pebble Beach, where you've got small greens on a real long golf course. So depending on your skill level, it's kind of the same thing.
But they got Forest. It's dialed in right now. The fairway's in excellent shape. You're going to get a little roll out there, but still enough grass to give yourself some shots going into those tiny greens. So
awesome.
I'll probably be out there again on Monday, too.
So who else is playing this week?
All right. Web.com Tour is playing. They are in the land of Lincoln. Lincoln Land Championship presented by LRS. They are playing Panther Creek Country Club in Springfield, Illinois. You've got a three-way tie at the lead. Billy Kennerly, Vincent Whaley, Eric Steger at 6-under. Not the typical field you see in the – so some of the guys at the top of the leaderboard aren't there. They were trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. They left this week open. Obviously, with the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, if they were out there as an alternate or having a chance. So not the names that you're seeing at the top of the top 25. Last week, though, top 10 for our boy Scotty Harrington. He's moved up. He's 53rd overall.
Awesome.
And starting to put some consistent play together, his second top 10 of the season. So we're hoping he's got a couple of more tournaments in him, maybe get near that top 25 and could be a special week when they get to Pumpkin here in a month and a half.
Yeah, that'll be in August, you said.
August 8th through 11th. And, we can't wait to be out there. I know Primetime had on Jeff Sanders. He was at Pebble earlier in the week, kind of previewing that. But it's getting to be go time, and we can't wait to be out there and find out the next 25 guys getting their tour cards.
Yeah, and I'm going to be out there and having a good time. And if people are interested in my new book, I'm going to be out there hocking it, and instead of the retail at $16.95, we're going to have it at
$10.80. You're going to be at the Fan Golf Classic presented by CUNY Lexus of Portland. That's coming up the 24th and 25th. There are, I think, three tee times left. It's in the morning round on Monday. So that's new this year for the fan listeners. We've done the afternoons, but those sold out so quickly, we added the Monday morning flight. So there's three rounds left. Go to 1080thefan.com if it's working. Is it working, Will?
The website for users is working right now.
It's fantastic.
Awesome.
The other thing I was going to say is, as a non-golf fan who produces a golf show, let me just say I do enjoy the book.
The book's fantastic.
Yes, it's very, very good. It's one of those ones where if you're kind of got The pictures themselves are so great is that when you're kind of trying to bide time or do anything else, it's great to flip through and get a good laugh.
Oh,
I
thanks.
Love it.
I appreciate that. And I'm going to be offering that for 1080, which
yeah,
is our call
$10.80. You'll be out there at the picnic tables near where the guys will be broadcasting Monday and Tuesday. So if you need a little gift for you got a birthday or something, or you screwed up Father's Day and forgot, makes a perfect little gift for the golfing dad. Harold will be out there signing them too. So we hope you come by and see us. As for the women, the LPGA at one of their regular stops, the Meyer LPGA Classic there in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Brooke Henderson back-to-back 64. She is at 16 under. She's got a three-shot lead. She's six shots clear of Annie Park and Jennifer Kupcho. Kupcho was her and it was Maria Fossey who had that great battle at the women's national amateur at Augusta earlier this year. No sooner did they finish their collegiate careers, went pro immediately, and you're looking at two future stars there with those two. Kupcho having a great goal here. Last week, Lexi Thompson won for the first time this season, her 11th victory. She had been playing well and was right there tied for second at the U.S. Women's Open and then follows through with a big victory last week. So we're starting to see the North American players get it going here late in the season.
Yeah, Brooke Henderson, 2 64s in a row is great, and she had a hole-in-one. That'll really get your juices going if you have a hole-in-one in your round. 21 years old, she's trying to break a Canadian tour player's record. So she has 8 victories. And I guess Mike Weir and George Knutson also have 8 victories. So one more, and she is the most winning Canadian player on tour.
Well, at the tender age, I think she's 23. I imagine she's going to obliterate that record, and there'll be plenty more where that's begun before she hangs it up.
Yeah, I think so. She's playing really good golf. It was good to, and you mentioned Lexi Thompson last week. It was good to see an American play so well. She outlasted Lee Six. And Lexi said she was just very patient. There was some tough conditions out there. She was pretty solid. What'd she do? I think she birdied the last two holes or something.
And she shot a 67 there on the final round. And Jung Yoon Lee, who won the U.S. Open, just that's amazing in itself, just to be in contention the next week. What a U.S. Open takes out of you. She kept it going, but a 70 on Sunday, and Lexi caught her. So great round there, and we'll see if she can keep that going. They got a few more majors yet this season. So that brings us back to Pebble Beach. We're going to discuss the U.S. Open most of the rest of the show here. Matt Adams going to join us in a minute, get his thoughts on what he's seen so far. But Gary Woodland with a 65 in round two is taking the lead at 9 under par. He's 2 shots clear of Justin Rose. Louis Oosthuizen at 6 under par there in third. You've got the former Duck Aaron Wise at 5 under, had a 66 in round one, held it together in round two with an even par. He's tied with Rory McIlroy. You have Brooks Koepka, the two-time defending champion, trying for the three-peat. He's at 4 under along with Matt Kuchar. Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson among those at 3 under par. So the question will be, how far back would you look? You've got Zach Johnson, John Rahm, Graham McDowell, Sergio Garcia, Xander Schauffele, all at 3 under par. You've got more big names in the 2 under range, but how far back are we looking for this weekend for somebody to come? You know, we've seen some 65s and some 66s, so we know the conditions are such that if you can give yourself a chance for birdies, tell you what, hold that thought. Matt's on the phone now. Let's break.
Okay.
Matt's calling in, so we'll break. We'll get Matt's thoughts on that as well as we talk U.S. Open here. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan. 8:16 here this morning. Jason Swigart with Harold Bluestein, and now so pleased to have back returning on the show. The multiple-time New York Times best-selling author. You see him on the weekends with Morning Drive and Golf Central on the Golf Channel. He hosts his award-winning radio show, Fairways of Life, Monday through Friday. You can get the podcast. I don't know how many of us are up at 5 Pacific to catch it live, Matt, but Matt Adams returning to the show. I know the podcasts are fantastic for people when they get going. With fairwaysoflife.com is where you can find everything. Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
Swag, how are you guys?
Oh, we are fantastic. We've been enjoying the U.S. Open. The conditions looks a little bit like a British Open there, the way that the weather has cooperated with them. And we were commenting, the conditions are such that not even the USGA could have messed this one up. Are we right?
Well, it's interesting because the USGA went in and did what the USGA does for the setup of a US Open. They made the rough longer. The rough already was dense and thick because it's perfect growing conditions. When you get sunshine, you guys know where you are. When you get sunshine, yet it's still relatively cool, cool nights, and then misty coming off the ocean or irrigation they put on that grass, whatever it is, it feeds the heck out of it. So it was already going to be uber dense, and that means that those leaves were really full of rye grass, really full of a lot of water. But then the USGA comes in, makes it longer. They move some fairways. Like the way that they move the fairway more towards the cliff on number 8 makes it so much more difficult a hole than what it was. It went from, for these guys, the second shot, you know, during the Pro-Am, maybe 160, 170 to more like 190, 200, and you got to take it in over the cliff, over the water to get it close to the hole. So the USGA did what they could. The simple answer is that Mother Nature stepped up and said no with a waving finger, and that it's going to be soft because the marine layer is still there. And the one thing that's missing is any real wind. The wind today, they're expecting it to be just over 10 miles per hour out of the northwest. It's going to continue to be cool, which does make the scoring hard. But unlike past U.S. Opens, it doesn't make it impossible.
So are you hearing from the players that the golf course is fair?
Yes, I am hearing that from the players, that they think that the golf course is fair. Now, part of that is also Pebble Beach. It's hard to really mess up Pebble Beach that much because the nature of the golf course, it plays very much. You mentioned like an open, it plays like a British Open in terms of how it's set up. It's not a real links course because it's not built on massive, you know, feet of sand. But nonetheless, the way that particularly those holes that crawl along the coastline and the cliffs play out, there isn't too much more you could do to them other than what the USGA has already done, which is to grow out and thicken up that rough. Other than that, Pebble Beach is playing the way Pebble Beach should be playing. If it was drier, it would be hopping a lot more. It'd be a lot faster. Think back, say, to 1992 when Tom Kite ended up eventually winning in 30, 40 mile per hour winds. But the ball was bouncing all over the place because it was as hard as playing, you know, off of stone or tile. But that's just not the case this year. So it's the golf course is gettable, if you will, and that's a very relative term. But more so than anything else, it's softer than what it has been in the past, and it's just not a long layout to begin with.
The stroke average from morning to afternoon was almost one stroke higher because of the Poana greens. Mm-hmm. Is that going to play out this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to continue to play out. It's just the nature of Poana because Poana blooms in the afternoon, and the ball tends to hop a lot more. I thought Tiger explained it best in his pre-tournament press conference when he said the way to be successful in these greens, the best chance that you have is you have to leave the ball below the hole. Interestingly enough, that which he didn't do yesterday, but you have to leave it below the hole so that when you take a run at the hole, you can be aggressive going uphill, and the harder you hit the ball in these Poana greens, the more it's likely to stay online. It's when you have to start to use nuance. That's when it really starts to bobble around, and that's when it gets more and more difficult as the day progresses.
Matt Adams, our guest, hosts Fairways of Life there. You can find that on whatever platform you've got for podcasts. Also, host there with the Golf Channel and Morning Drive joining us here. We take a look at the leaderboard. Gary Woodland goes low yesterday with a 65. He's got a two-shot lead over Justin Rose. Louis Oosthuizen, the former Duck, Aaron Wise, is at 5-under, along with Rory McIlroy. And then you've got Brooks Koepka, back-to-back 69s at 4-under par, looking to three-peat for the second time in U.S. Open history. Matt Kuchar, who's played as consistent as anybody this season. How far down this leaderboard are we looking to find people who have the potential to get towards the top by Sunday afternoon?
You know, what's interesting about that question is that I just did a thing on Morning Drive about it this morning, to tell you the truth, because the question was asked, what about Tiger at level par and Phil Mickelson at 1-under, and do they still have a shot in this championship? And I said, well, let's look at it this way. right now, Woodland is at 9 under par. Let's say that he goes one, maybe two more into the red, and then average it and say 10 under. That would be one, right? But let's say it's 10 under. If he's 10 under par and Tiger is at level par, then Tiger needs to shoot collectively 65, 66, some combo thereof, just to catch him. Then you need help at the top of the leaderboard. Phil's pretty much the same. He might be 66, 66, but nonetheless, you have to do something remarkable. And we're talking about 65s, which Gary Woodland, yes, had, and Justin and Rose had, and both of them matched Tiger Woods with the 65 that he had in his historic 2000. You're talking about the best scores in U.S. Opens ever at Pebble Beach. And not only do these players have to do it once, they have to do it twice. So what it does is it says, can they do it? Sure. It is a possibility. You're saying it's a possibility? Yes. But it's very, very slim, and it's a very steep uphill climb. And you can use that same math as you slide up the leaderboard where you say, okay, if somebody, say, four under par, like Brooks, right, he's five shots back, what does he need to do? Well, he needs to pick up on average three strokes per day in order to eclipse. Well, three strokes per day means that Gary would have to shoot essentially even par. Not likely to do that. I've got him at a stroke to half a stroke collectively over the 2 days below par, most likely. That means that Brooks Koepka needs to shoot a couple of rounds of 68. Is Brooks capable? Absolutely he's capable of doing that. That's why you have to continue to keep an eye on him. And that kind of logic can be used up and down that leaderboard to see what players need to do in order to catch the leader. And you can see that the number is starting to get squeezed lower and lower, even though we have 36 holes to go.
Well, Brooks came back last year after being down five strokes after 36 holes. So it's possible for somebody to come out of nowhere, but the last 23 Open winners came from inside the top six after 36 holes. So I don't see anyone from Heinrich Stenson down that includes Tiger and Phil. I don't see them coming back and winning this at all. I'm looking in that top six, and we've got some players up there who've got a lot of experience of playing well, and that's Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, and Louis Oosthuizen, who's a major champion too and playing very well. So it's for all those reasons. It's everything you just laid out. It's not just about getting in the fast lane and doing something insane and playing really well, but there's so much traffic in front of you. And to think that all of those players are going to lay down, it's just not going to happen. It's extremely remote that players that are anywhere outside of, say, four under par have a shot at winning this. Again, it is possible, and I know historically there are precedents that are there as well, but it's really rare for the whole top of the leaderboard to slow up. When it happens in major championships, A, it's about setup, and we have no indication that setup is going to alter from prior days. Two, it's also about extraordinary weather, and someone does something despite the weather that was remarkable. It does happen. It's extremely rare. It doesn't look like we're looking at those conditions at Pebble Beach. It looks like everybody's going to continue to cruise, and if they go, each of them collectively, a couple under par, it's hard for anybody to chase up the leaderboard and chase that somebody that's far enough outside. It's just a tall task.
Chatting here with Matt Adams, host on Golf Channel, hosts his podcast Fairways of Life as well. So if my math is correct, 9 of the top 18 players on the leaderboard right now have won a major in their career. Of the 9 that haven't, including Gary Woodland, who's the most likely to be able to sustain being at the top of the leaderboard and possibly break through for the first time?
I actually like Gary Woodland a lot. I liked him coming in because there's an interesting stat with Gary. You're going to hear people talk over the next few hours and through this round about how powerful he is, about how he's a long ball player and all the rest. And all of that is true. He was a multi-sport athlete. He is a very powerful guy, and he hits the ball a long way. But what a lot of people don't realize is that if you look at a stat on the PGA Tour called total driving is not just about your average driving length, where people get very impressed when they look at driving lengths from the top players. I get it. But total driving is about both length and accuracy. And in that regard, he is tied for third this year on the PGA Tour. So he already came in with an advantage. Now, consider the fact that we're talking about a golf course at Pebble that's not terribly long by the standard that these players are used to. So now you've got players such as Gary Woodland, but same thing for Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy and DJ as well. They don't have to hit driver off every tee. So the more loft that you're using with the club, the longer that as a ball compresses in the violent interaction between club and ball, the longer it is on the face if there is more loft. Obviously, a driver, less loft, it ricochets off a lot faster, even though there is a deformity to the ball and the club at that point, too. But the more loft, the more control that they have. If you give these guys more control and they already have the length to be coming in with a high lofted iron many times into these greens, it's a formidable combination. The most formidable thing, though, that Gary Woodland is doing is he came into this week ranked 150th on tour in strokes gained putting. So far through 36 holes, he's ranked number one on the field. So there's an inspiration there. He's got it working. If he even putts average from this point on, he will be tough to beat.
Matt, interestingly, you're talking about the long ball hitters. We've got Brooks Koepka. We've got Gary Woodland was like one of the original big athletes to come in, Brooks Koepka being another. Are golf courses like Pebble or Pebble in particular, is its future as a U.S. Open host course behind us, or can we still see it in the future?
Oh, I absolutely think you can still see it in the future. You know, I know a lot of people look at the length that the top players are playing and they go, well, they're obsoleting the golf course. And I scratch my head and go, well, they didn't obsolete Marion when Justin Rose won there. And sure, they may not be coming in with five irons like Nicklaus did to a particular green. Maybe that five iron's become an eight or a nine or a seven iron. But the guy who shoots the lowest score is still going to win. Does the players with more length have more of an advantage in those golf courses? Of course they did. But players with more length have always had more advantage, and regardless of the course that they're playing. So I don't actually think that these classic golf courses will become obsolete because of the length that players today are hitting the golf ball. I think that we have a very compelling, a very interesting tournament going on right now, and this is on one of these shorter golf courses. So, no, I'm not one of the camp who's ringing bells saying it's time to panic that we're going to lose all these classic golf courses, because we've got a great U.S. Open going on right now.
You can follow him on Twitter, at Matt Adams, F-O-L. Check out his podcast, fairwaysoflife.com, is where you can figure out how to link to it on whatever platform you use. That is Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern time, 5 o'clock here in the Pacific, if you want to catch it live, if you're up early. You see him on Golf Channel all over the place, Morning Drive and such. Matt Adams, thanks so much for joining us once again. You got a favorite who you're looking at? Do you think he's going to be getting the medal on Sunday?
I actually think it's going to come down to Louis Oosthuizen and Gary Woodland. That's what my heart is saying, and I'd love to see Gary close it out. He's a great story. He lost a kid in 17 in childbirth, a twin. The other son was born. He said it's changed his life. I think he can hold on.
Well, it should be an exciting weekend. Thank you so much for your time, and we can't wait to catch up with you again.
Thank you very much, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye. Matt Adams there. Helping us out, understanding everything that's going on down there at Pebble Beach with the 119th U.S. Open. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about you're seeing that lengthy rough protecting those tiny greens, how to work some of those finesse shots right around the greens, what those guys are staring at while they're staring down at the ball for so long, trying to assess how to get them out. So Harold will help you as much as he can with that. And then we'll have our picks and what we're looking for this weekend as we make the turn here. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Tips for your game from award-winning PGA instructor Harold Bluestein. It's time to Ask the Pro on Golf in the Northwest. Brought to you on The Fan by Laurelhurst Market.
8:34 here this morning. Thanks again to Matt Adams. You can find him again on Twitter at Matt Adams, F-O-L. He's all over the place, but as you heard there, as dialed in to what's going on in the world of golf as anybody, so we appreciate any time he's available for us. But we mentioned, you know, the protection for Pebble Beach and its iconic, what keeps it playable and relevant for these championships is the fact that despite the lack of length, they can't do much more to it. They find little nooks and crannies here and there where they can and move some tee boxes occasionally, but it's basically 7,100 yards. The greens are small.
Right.
And then you let the rough grow. You have well-placed bunkers. You have the vision of the ocean there and a lot of sight lines that if you're not prepared, that can, you know, throw you if you haven't prepared for it. Most of these guys, that's not a problem anymore. But when you get around the greens in that lush, lush, deep, rough, and small greens that are very slopey, a lot of times you leave yourself short. You've got to be able to figure out how to get the ball up out of it without having it traveling a great distance, which for the amateur is one of the most difficult shots they'll come across.
Well, it is, because that shot on a deep rough on a short side, if you short side yourself on a green, that means that the pin is closer to you than it is to the other side of the green. That makes things difficult. And I saw an awful lot of shots in the last 2 days where players had to get that ball up quickly onto the green, roll out, and not roll very far. For amateur players, that's a difficult shot because they don't think of it as being similar to a bunker shot, but basically it's a bunker shot with a couple little alterations, but nothing major. The first issue is selecting a landing area on the green. So that'll help you decide how high you want to hit the ball and how far. So now you can decide whether you're going to use a 54-degree wedge, a 58, a 60, or even Phil using a 64-degree wedge. And so it's important at that point to think in terms of how deep is the ball in the grass. But let's not get lost in that too much. Let's just assume the ball is in the grass. I'll tell you what, it is not sitting on the ground. You might imagine that the ball, you got to dig down there and dig the ball out. You do not. The ball is actually up off the ground. It's being suspended by the grass. So a lofted club, too high a lofted club, could slide too far under it. But I would think that is what you want, is your highest lofted club to start with. So how are we going to produce that shot?
So now we get over there, and the ball. So let's say the ball is completely under the top edge of the blades of grass.
It
so
will be.
Not
yep.
partially exposed, but it's down. So there's grass surrounding it 360 degrees, whether it's on the ground or not, whatever.
Right.
So where are you trying to get the club to pass underneath it?
Well, you're going to hit the, like out of a bunker, you're going to hit the grass or the sand behind the ball. The problem that most amateurs have is they're going to try and dig the ball out. You do not have to dig the ball out. Just like out of a bunker, it's the force of the ball, the club hitting the sand that gets the ball out of the bunker. It's not actually contacting the golf ball itself. So think in terms of a bunker shot. So how are you going to set up? Well, and setup's very important here. The players who dig like to get their hands way, way forward, and they basically de-loft their, let's say their 60-degree wedge. They end up de-lofting it down to about 54, 52. Now you've defeated the whole purpose of having a high lofted club. I like to have you set up with a little more weight to your left foot, just a little bit, and no shaft lean toward the hole. Get that shaft pointed more to your belt buckle. What that does is it reduces the effect of the leading edge or the digging edge of the club, and it exposes more of the bounce of the club. So the bounce is that bottom part of the club. You need a pretty good bounce. As in a bunker, you need to have that bounce hitting before the leading edge. Unless it's wet sand, so that's a little different issue. So shaft lean, dead center. Now, the other thing you want to do is you want to reduce the amount of wrist tinge you have. Now, you're going to see a number of different styles from players this weekend. Some will have a bit more wrist hinge, but usually they're trying to minimize the amount of wrist hinge because releasing that club head, and I saw it out of Patrick Reed just prior to him snapping his wedge over his knee, that he released the club head. And that's releasing it means he hinged and he unhinged. And when you do that, you essentially expose that leading edge back to the ball. The club face shuts. It gets stuck in that long grass. And now you hit it left or it dies right there.
So then the other, so you get your setup. Now the other thing is we see out there, we'll see like Phil take like a full backswing. Yep. But he can pop it straight up and it only goes how, what, from backswing to how hard to get through it, how, you know, one well, that's feel, you got to go out and practice and stuff. But right. Generally speaking, what are you trying to do? Because you also talk about these, you got to keep the club head accelerating through the ball. It's just a matter of, as you said, hitting the grass underneath it versus actually hitting. If you hit the ball, you're dead.
Right. Well, what two things that you mentioned there in all of that. One is how hard you hit and how far do you finish. Those two things are not necessarily the same. If you're trying to hit the ball hard and you've got some wrist hinge, you're going to release it and you're going to be in trouble. You need to learn how to make a long swing with not a lot of speed. And in some cases, you may not finish very high. Okay, and it's not necessarily about accelerating. It's about keeping the pace of the stroke going and even and smooth, just like in putting. We don't necessarily want to accelerate, but we don't want to decelerate. So players say, well, I don't want to decelerate, so I'm going to accelerate. How about keeping your pace the same? And in that shot there in particular, you can take a long, smooth stroke and avoid the acceleration. And wherever you finish, you finish.
Yeah.
And
that's where you talk about not hinging or cocking the wrists.
Right.
So I think they call it a dead arm swing. Is what they refer to there, where you keep them kind of in the same position relative to one another. And then the body just takes you.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It's more of a dead arm or a more relaxed arm swing. The more tension you put into it, the more you're likely to unhinge if you have overhinged in the backswing. So I like to feel as if I'm taking it back very smoothly, kind of slow, swinging through smoothly, kind of slow. And I practice that shot a lot, and I try to keep the club face open as I finish the shot. So when I finish, I'm looking at that club face. The leading edge is kind of still aimed airborne as opposed to rotating over to the left.
And this is something that you want to get out where if your golf course you go at has a bunker, a short range practice area, go find, hopefully they've got some rough that they've let grown up somewhere. And this is one you just got to practice and get a feel for it.
Oh, absolutely. This is one you better practice a lot. As a matter of fact, I was practicing this shot last week, and I realized that after playing in the Pro-Am, I used it quite a bit. I wasn't quite as effective. I need a little more work on it because it is really not like a normal swing. It's very similar, but it's not necessarily the same, particularly when you're dealing with your hands and your setup and that shaft being pointed to your center where we're used to getting that shaft lean forward.
And so, yeah, that's one. And the way that the conditions have been here this year, you're seeing a lot of courses that are lush and green. So that second cut of rough is going to be, you know, very lush, and it's going to be pretty close to a lot of greens in the courses in the area. So very, very useful. Thank you very much. I know what to go practice now.
Yeah,
that
of course.
Don't hit it in the rough. That's the first rule.
Well, that would be nice. We could talk a little bit more about that as we close out the show on the players who are not hitting that shot very well. And one of them that may surprise you is Phil Mickelson, who we all say is this brilliant short game guy. Well, I can tell you he's like 188th in the field, and I have the exact stat here somewhere in his short game. Yeah, he is 120th in his short game. That is not very good.
No, that's not typical Phil. That's not what he made his hay on over his years. We're going to get to more fun nuggets and stats that you've got there. And we'll make our predictions, what we're hoping to see, what we think we'll see with the 119th U.S. Open Championship. First groups are just teeing off here in round three at Pebble. The leaders will go off at 2:45 this afternoon. We finish things up here with Harold and Jason. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
CCB 206.
Which new driver is best for your game? Who makes the best golf gear? Where should you take your next golf vacation? Which local course should you get to know better? This is the Business of Golf, every week on Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
8:47 here, wrapping things up. Golf in the Northwest coming up next. It'll be Sinner and Saint. They'll put their spin on the NBA Finals, Toronto winning their first title. Maybe the St. Louis Blues winning their first ever Stanley Cup. Maybe.
More importantly, will Yusai Ujiri actually go to prison?
Stop it. They got to drop that.
Salacious, baby. Salacious.
No prosecutor in his right mind wants to deal with that case. That's a non-winner right there.
Yeah, let's charge a millionaire.
And then we've got the Les Schwab Bowl. I'll be going home, studying up, getting my charts ready. Andrew Nemec going to join me out there at Hillsborough Stadium on the call. That'll be at 5:30 this afternoon, kickoff at 6. We'd love to see you out there. Perfect weather. Tickets available at the gate, so come on out. It'll be a great time there. We got Cubs and Dodgers over on 910 ESPN Portland here this evening. But as we look at the business of golf, and it's all about the 119th U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And we're looking at the leaderboard here. Gary Woodland, Justin Rose will be your last group at 2:45. Aaron Wise, the former Duck, playing in the second-to-last group with Louis Oosthuizen. They'll go at 2:34. Rory McIlroy and Ches Reavie playing together. You've got Kuchar and Chesson Hadley together. Brooks Koepka, Matt Wallace at 2 o'clock. So plenty of big names, as we mentioned. It's half and half. Guys that have won majors, guys that haven't. The group you want to watch out for today, on moving day at 1:28, Zach Johnson and Graham McDowell playing together. Easy pairing, comfortable pairing. If one of them gets it going, the other one could jump on board. That's two guys that you could see sneaking up, making birdies, putting it in the fairway, hitting greens, which is going to be the key. I know the USGA will do whatever they can with the pin placements to make it as difficult as possible, where if you go for it and miss, you're staring at bogey.
Yeah, I don't see those guys. Yeah, I think they're going to make a little bit of noise. Graham McDowell played quite well yesterday.
Well, Graham McDowell was the last winner of the U.S. Open, played at Pebble Beach in 2010.
Yeah, but he's also 11th, and he's tied for 11th, and he's 3 under, and you're going to ask Gary Woodland to give up 6 shots right there to catch him. I just don't think that's possible. I think they're going to play well. I don't know if they have the firepower to catch him. Both have really good short games. They both hit wedges really well.
Well, let's hear from Gary Woodland, who is the 36-hole leader, and talked about being in this position yet again.
You know, I've been in this position before. I was in this, you know, last year in August at Belle Reve, and, you know, didn't come out where I wanted to, but I learned a lot from that. I've learned a lot. I don't have to be perfect with my ball striking because I have other things that can pick me up. And that's been a huge confidence boost for me, knowing I don't have to play perfect and I can still contend and still have a good chance to win.
Well, he's putting really well, and he's getting a lot of help with his putting in the last couple of years. Gary Woodland is a really good athlete, plays well, but his best U.S. Open finish is tied for 23rd. So, and his best major finish is tied for 6th. This is really a whole new territory for Gary Woodland. I think he's better mentally. He's tougher than he was, and players learn how to be tougher in these situations. He made one of the best birdies yesterday on his last hole, the 9th hole. Hits a drive right in the middle and right into a divot. He's got a lot of decisions to make. He hits it out of the divot, right of the flag, about 30 feet, and makes a putt for birdie on the hardest-ranked hole on the golf course. And he picked up 2 shots right there. That shows me that he is tough enough to win, albeit new territory for him.
Yeah, he's a veteran of the PGA Tour. He's been out there for a while. He's been
35 years old, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then you got Justin Rose, who's won a U.S. Open. He'll be playing with. So I think that'll be good for Gary, because if Justin keeps it going, I think if Gary just almost goes into a match play mentality with Justin Rose, that might serve him better than worrying about everybody. I could see that being of benefit to him with his mindset. And it's like, all right, I need to, if I keep up with Justin, I'm going to be in position to win this on Sunday.
Well, I would agree with you. Justin Rose has not played well, and he's a perfectionist when it comes to his swing, and he hits the ball so solid. We're used to him hitting fairways and greens, and he's not. And if he weren't first in short game strokes gained and third in putting, he wouldn't have made the cut. So if Justin Rose starts hitting fairways and greens, Gary Woodland's in for a tough battle. They're both in for a tough one when it comes to Louis Oosthuizen,
yep,
who I think is, and Matt said this, really a very solid player. In all the statistics, he is right in there in that 15th to 20th and statistically, but he's fifth in putting. So he's putting very well, even though he missed a couple.
And that was the key. Aaron Wise, who came out with that 66 in round one, told everybody why he was finally able to take advantage of his length off the tee.
It was solid. You know, it was nice to finally get my putter going. That's kind of what's been missing this whole year for me in a way. And today I was able to putt well. These are greens I'm kind of accustomed to being from Southern California, and just felt like the ball striking part's always been there. It was nice to see some putts drop, and it added up to a great score.
Yeah, I'm not surprised when you look at the leaderboard to see that Gary Woodland's first in putting, Justin Rose is third, Louis Oosthuizen fifth, and Rory McIlroy is not doing real well, but Aaron Wise is fourth in putting. So this is a putter's golf course.
Yep.
If you can hit the greens, and you take a player like Chev Reavie, who he's second in hitting greens, but he is 89th in putting. So you got a choice. You're either going to hit the greens and you're going to make a lot of pars that way. But if you're going to win this tournament, you better be well up there in putting.
No question. I think what we saw Rory do last week at the RBC Canadian in his final round, I think that's still in the back of everybody's mind. If he can bomb it 330, put it right where he wants to in the middle of the fairway, giving himself those short wedges into the greens and get hot with the putter, he's one of those guys that can put a 65, a 64 together given the conditions. All eyes will be on him, I think, today, be it moving day. If he can get himself into the last group on Sunday, that's going to scare the bejesus out of the rest of the field.
I think he is an odds-on favorite to win this because, except for two holes, he went bogey, double bogey yesterday. I think it was on 14 and 15 or 13 and 14. No, 13 and 14. And he made some poor decisions. He lost three shots in two holes.
Yeah, and 13 and 14.
Right. He should be winning or one shot behind Gary Woodland. And he's not putting that well. He missed a couple of little ones. So, yeah, he's the guy to watch. He is so good off the tee. He and Gary Woodland and Brooks Koepka are so good off the tee. This is something that Justin Rose better fix quickly, because these guys are going to have those wedges into greens, and they're consistently in fairways. So, look for him to do something. I don't see Matt Kuchar as having a snowball's chance.
Kuch is going to finish in the top four. He's going to do what he's doing. He's shooting 69. His deal is he can't make the birdies.
Right.
He's getting greens and fairways and greens that'll put him there. But because of the conditions where guys are able to shoot 65, 66 and 65, unless he starts dropping those 15 to 20 footers that he consistently just lag putts and leaves, for tap in pars, That's what's held Kuchar back from winning majors in his career.
Yeah, exactly. He'll probably shoot even or a couple under. And
he'll be there at
win.
7-8 under. So the question is, does the field come back to him to play him in, or does Gary Woodland, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy end up being at 12 or 13 under on Sunday?
I think you're going to see the golf course giving up some good scores going into the weekend, and you know that's going to be fun.
It's going to be a blast. Fox 12 Oregon has it. And so I think they start at 10 a.m. today, 9 or 10 a.m. tomorrow. You got the women's U.S. soccer team World Cup first, and as soon as that's over, they'll go right to final round coverage of the U.S. Open, Fox 12 Oregon. Thanks again to Matt Adams for joining us today. Thanks to Will Darkins, as always. It's going to be fun this weekend.
Yeah, it is. Let's go eat a donut.
Okay, let's go have a donut. And then you'll hear me later this afternoon with the Les Schwab Bowl. For Harold, I'm Jason. Hit him straight.
Susie said yes. They're tightening up.